outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain.
The last promise from last week, in a few moments, you're going to get to hear the world premiere of the first episode of a project I've been on for the last number of years called My Friend Lewis. It's the story of a friend of mine, his troubled upbringing in Mexico, to coming to the United States, to the friendship God has given us, and to how it's shaped the trajectory of both of our lives in an amazing way. It's called My Friend Lewis. It's going to air in a very immersive storytelling podcast that's going to be 12 episodes long. That's it. It's not a new podcast. It's going to exist forever. 12 episodes to allow you to be inside his story, my story, our story, and see what God has done. It's the most incredible story of God's grace in the midst of trouble that I've ever heard. And I'm excited to share it with you. This has been on my heart for a long, long time. So we're going to do that in just a moment. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. This is The God Journey. And before we get to that episode, let me just bring you up to speed on a couple of things I want to share with you. Number one, we're kind of rebranding the podcast a little bit, The God Journey. Oh, it'll still continue pretty much like it is, conversations with people. But we've got a new podcast cover. You might notice it on this recording that you have here. It'll lead to a new website eventually within the next few days or week. I'm not sure how long it's going to take, but we're getting a whole new look on that. The main thing that excites me is the tagline. It has been before, helping people think outside the box of religious obligation. Now it's just going to be tagged Adventures in Living Loved, which is also going to include, by the way, getting free from religious obligation, because that's a big part of it. But I think it's going to describe what we're doing here in a more accessible way for other people. So that's just cosmetic, but hopefully you'll enjoy taking a look at that. And secondly, I had a conversation last weekend with people who wanted to talk about being out of step with their friends politically, particularly their other Christian friends, and how do we negotiate that space when it feels like I'm ostracized if I'm not totally on board with things my Christian friends feel. And I've been through a lot of that myself in the last few months. So we got together Sunday, did a Zoom call, talked about, didn't record it, so it's nothing to pass on to anybody else. But as part of that conversation, we continued to chip around the edges of the conversation needed in our culture along the lines of racial equity. And how hard that is sometimes, especially for the majority culture, to explore racial inequity without becoming shamed or feeling guilty or somehow feeling like they're being asked to give up something of their own heritage to have this conversation. So we kind of picked around the edges of that and have decided this Sunday we'd hold another conversation. I've asked Arnita Taylor, my co-author from A Language of Healing for a Polarized Nation, to come join us. And we're going to talk about how to have conversations about racial equity with people in your life and how to be a good ally in this process of helping us find equal justice under the law for everyone, regardless of skin color. And I'm excited about doing that. The reason I'm telling you about it, we're going to limit people in the room. This Zoom call is only going to have about 20, 25 people in it. I'm going to prayerfully pick those because I want us to have more of a conversation rather than have 50, 60 people in the room and then they just kind of have scattered shot sharings all over the place. But the reason I'm telling you is because we're going to stream it live at 10:30 Pacific time this Sunday morning, February 14th. Yeah, I know it's Valentine's Day, but seriously, that's not that important for me. We're going to go ahead and do it on that morning. If you'd like to be in that room and feel like you have a really good contributions to make to this conversation, email me and I'll see if I can get you in. We're going to limit it. But if you really have a good reason to be in there, then I'm going to help you get there. But we're also going to be streaming it live. So you're welcome to be off the God Journey Facebook page. There'll be a link to it at the bottom of these podcast notes at the website. And you can go to that podcast page and have a look and participate in the conversation with us, at least listening to it. Probably some excerpts from that are going to make it into a future God Journey podcast because I think this is an important conversation. It's a polarizing one, and yes, it's a painful one, and for many people, because of all the external noise that go along with this, very simply, are we a society that embraces equality regardless of skin color, and if not, what can we do to improve that? And that conversation is going on in the wider culture. We're going to explore it a little bit here on Sunday morning, but for now, Let's get to My Friend Lewis. You can view the trailer if you want to, myfriendlewis.com, and Lewis is spelled L-U-I-S. Again, there'll be a link at the bottom of this podcast. There's future episodes listed there, which you can explore and see what's coming up. And you can subscribe to that podcast if you want to your favorite podcast provider. There are links on the myfriendlewis.com website, so you can find your favorite podcast feed and subscribe to it. The trailer's already available that way, and then the first episodes will drop next Tuesday, February 16th, and every Tuesday morning for the next 12 weeks, a new episode will drop. If you didn't hear last week's podcast, it might be a great thing just to pause here, go back and pick up that podcast. Lewis and I talk about our friendship, this project, some of the things that just give you a good background for where this may go. But if you'd rather not, stay tuned, because this is meant to stand on its own. Here it is. I can't wait to share it with you. The world premiere of the first episode of My Friend Lewis.
I've never been so alone in my life. I've never been so lonely. If I ever knew brokenness at that moment, I was aware of my brokenness. If I ever knew shame at that moment, I was full of shame. I was hungry. I was in a lot of pain. I was very cold. I was very hungry. And I was very, I mean, very, very scared.
Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. And over the next 10 episodes, I want to introduce you to my friend Lewis, who is one of the most incredible human beings I've ever had the pleasure to know. And I've known many. I've authored a number of books on spiritual intimacy. I've helped to facilitate conversations across some of the most divisive issues of our day with rooms full of polarized people. And to do both of those things, I've traveled all over the world. I've met thousands of people and find each one fascinating in their own way. But I've never met anyone like Lewis. His story is one of the most compelling I've ever heard. Out of a painful childhood, he carries an unrelenting hunger for life, and in that pursuit, he has become a man of deep wisdom and unfathomable generosity. I've known him for the past 12 years, and he has become one of my closest friends and confidants. So let's begin on the afternoon of December 19th, 1994. It's a cold evening in Tijuana. Lewis is 21 years old. He first came to the United States when he was 16 on a visa for competitive boxing. But when it expired, he stayed on with his brothers and sisters who were already living here. A few days before, he'd returned to Mexico to take a car to his mother, who desperately needed it. Now he's headed back, and without a visa, that means finding his way through the wall. Earlier in the day, he'd landed in Tijuana and made his way to the border. He's alone, and this is his story in his own words.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be arriving at Tijuana International Airport in about 5 minutes, where it's a chilly 50 degrees. Please make sure your seats and trays are in the upright.
The first thing I recall is when you're on the plane and the pilot announces that you're coming to Tijuana, that thing starts bringing like shivers into your body, and you get goosebumps and your heart starts racing. Just knowing what's to come, lots of fear. And then that's the moment where you start questioning yourself, why in the world did I leave the U.S. to begin with? What was I thinking? So on the excitement, I wanted to see my mom and everything's fine. You're on your way back to Mexico, but on the way back, that's when you're paying the price. And being 21 and single, I didn't have much responsibilities, so... You know, I was a bit reckless. That's something, a chance I would not take now, especially with a wife and kid. Back then, I took that risk, and I pay a hefty price for it. When I was, I remember when you first come here, you're in a place, it's kind of like limbo. Tijuana is still part of Mexico, but you don't belong there. And you don't belong, you're not where you were born. You just don't belong there. I don't think they even want you there. That's a place where everybody, there's a lot of predators. in a lot of pray there. I remember the night when I was crossing. You try to cross as, you know, as soon as possible. So on that very same night, I tried to cross. As I was preparing to cross, you just get as close as you can to the border. And at that point, there were three points of entry. And there were one that's called canals, where the sewer lines go, you know, the canals for the sewer lines. There's another one called Playas, which you mean by the beach. And there's another one called El Cerro, which is the mountains. So I decided to go with the canals. As I was getting close to the canals, because you have to get close to the border, there's area like a no man's land where the Mexican police patrols, and you have to go through that. They have another police back then that it was kind of some sort of a secret police called BETA, B-E-T-A. It's an acronym. I don't know what it stands for, really, but it's called B-E-T-A. There was so much corruption that they changed it. Now it's a support team now. They help migrants now at the border. If somebody gets hurt or stuff like that, kind of like a Red Cross type of thing. But not to confuse them with the Red Cross, what they did, they all dressed in orange from top to bottom. So back then, they used to be dressed like us, you know, like civilians, like anybody else. And their job was to infiltrate into just going to people and find out who was in drug cartels or who was in smuggler or who was pickpocketed, things like that. But they were very, there was a lot of, I'm not saying all of them are or were, but they were the ones I encountered, they were corrupt. I didn't know they were part of the law enforcement because they didn't even identify themselves. One of them approached me and he just, he pulled a knife and he says, "Give me all your money." At first, he was kind of like 20 feet away from me. I didn't really take him seriously. I just kept walking. I ignored him. And then two more came, one, I remember one from my left and one from my right, and the other one was behind me. That's when I knew this thing got real. And having a background on boxing and being fit, running 7 miles every day, and not just running, but I mean really running, I was in great shape. The only thing I had back then, it was two things. $100 bill, which is what's a mistake, and one of those chapsticks that my mom gave me was a brand new one. I remember it was still like in the seal; it was still wrapped. My mom, she said it was December, and she remembered her telling me it's gonna get cold and your lips will get chapped. So here, this is for the road. It's not the mistake to have the $100, but having the actual bill, not having like different denominations, like fives. You can stack $10 on one shoe and then 20 on the other one, and you know, different packets, not have one. If they take 100 bill, they take it all. They wanted money. And at one point I tried to reason with them, telling them that, look, you know, you're here, you're struggling, I'm struggling, you know, that don't, I mean, you're taking from, I mean, what are you doing? You're just taking from the poor. And my mentality at that point, the way I was trying to reason with them is by telling them, you should take from the rich, right? You know, come on. In my mind, I said, like, you know, why are you taking from me? I have nothing. So they said, well, you have shoes, you have everything now, so you're going to give us all of that. So as they got close to me, I guess it's one of those reactions of fly or fight. And I start to fight them. And I remember the first one when he approached me, he pointed the knife really close to me, and just by a reaction, I flinched, and I grabbed his right hand with my left, and then I punched it with my right, and then I came back with the left hook again and knocked him out. Then the other two attacked me, and I just knocked out all three of them. And I just start running. And then as I was encountering people, because it was at that time, like it was around, I don't know, like probably 11-ish p.m. So you see a lot of people there. There's people all night there. They're doing all kinds of things, whether they're selling, buying, or crossing. So as I encountered, I said, hey, there's robbers back there. Don't go that way, right? And everybody could just keep running. And then I heard him back there screaming the word pareja, ayúdame, pareja, ayúdame. Your pareja, it's your partner. Help me, help me. That's when it dawned on my mind. I was like, wait, what are they calling each other partners? You know, that's something that you don't use like that. And then they start running behind me, and I start hearing radios. And so I was like, what did I get myself into? Later I learned that they were actually police officers. I didn't know. And they tried to rob me, however, doesn't make it right either. But at least I would have just probably handed them the $100. Get it over with. So they started chasing me. And they chased me down the canals. They chased me for like probably, I don't know, maybe like 2 hours. By then, it was like probably 1 a.m. Because there's a part where there's no fence between the U.S. and Mexico. At least not on 90. It was like the width of like two football fields. That time, there was a lot of water running, but it was still raining. It was kind of full. On top of that, then you have roads, and then you have parks. So it's about kind of like, I don't know, about 4 or 5 football fields width from the fence of the United States border to the first road in the Mexican side. So it's just empty. It's just empty. You're just running on concrete all this whole time because the canals are so wide. The first thing on my mind, the first thing was like when I start hearing that, I just hit because I couldn't explain myself. I mean, it was my word against them, and I was going to lose. Those three were corrupt, definitely. On the edge of the canals, there's like these kind of like gaps, if you want to call them. And what I did, I hid on one of them. Some of them are wider than others. So what I did, I just went sideways on one of them. And I just hid there for like, I don't know, maybe like about 2 hours probably until I didn't hear any more sirens of cars or you know, cars running around or seeing any movement or hearing anything. After that, I thought it was done. I got out and then I started walking and I was really hungry, thirsty, scared, very scared. So I start walking towards the Mexican side to the houses there on Tijuana, and I'm going to see if I can find a place where I can eat something. So I start walking towards the, there was a, I remember a chain link fence, and I start walking towards it. As soon as I jumped the fence, I saw a police car coming actually in the opposite direction, but there was a divider on the road. The car couldn't make a U-turn there. So when I saw the car going by, my heart started racing again, because I thought they're probably still looking for me. As soon as there was the first opportunity to make a U-turn, it made a U-turn and turned on the lights. At that moment, I knew it was because of me. So I took off running again back into the canal. When I ran into the canal, that same police cruiser, that same car. They actually drove to the chain link fence because in their mind, I assaulted police officers. So in their mind, I was the worst, and they needed to stop me. They start following me on that car. There's parts where you cannot go on cars. So they get out of the car. They started chasing me, and I start seeing police everywhere. They look like ants. I mean, everywhere. I didn't know it was such a big deal. They were all looking for me. They made it a priority to catch me. They started shooting at me. And some were screaming, stop. Others were just shooting at me. All of a sudden, I got this thought, very strong thought in my mind that said, stop, stop. So I didn't obey them. I obeyed the voice that said, stop. So I stopped. And I remember when I stopped and I put my hands up, they start shooting at me. And I thought I was getting shot on the legs because I start feeling like kind of like bee stings. They felt kind of like bee stings on my calves and my legs. But what it was that when they were shooting at the they were hitting the concrete. All the little shrapnel from the concrete was hitting me on the legs. And then I looked down and I touched my legs and they were all bloody. In my mind, I thought I was shot. So they got really close to me. They have all their guns drawn and everything. They start giving me instructions. Get on the ground. I got on the ground. They said, put your hands behind your back. I put my hands behind my back. They handcuffed my hands and they also handcuffed my legs. And as soon as they did that, that's when the beating started. Then they started kicking me. Like, I mean, I don't know for how long, it seemed like an eternity. They broke two ribs on my right side. I was all beat up. Then they put me back on my feet and they start carrying me down, like dragging me. And my face was hitting the concrete because they were dragging me like if I was a piece of luggage. When somebody else came in, he ordered them to take down the handcuffs off my feet. So they took them off and then they helped me up. When they helped me up, I remember that this female officer came in. And as she got really close to me, she spit on my face. She spit on my face, and then she says, this is the guy that beat up our partners. And then she tried to slap me. And then I saw when she tried to slap me, in boxing it's called telegraph. I saw it coming, so I slipped the punch, and then she hit somebody else. I thought it was really funny. And then when she grabbed my chin, and then she started punching me on the face. When she did that, I said something I shouldn't done it. I remember looking at her and say, is that all you got? Really? And I try to make it, I don't know why I said that. I said, you hit like a girl. Then a guy came in, grabbed my chin and hit me with his flashlight, right on top of my head. He hit me so hard that my eyes were watery. I didn't cry because of the pain. The tears were forced down my eyes. It was really painful. And then he looked at me and said, how's that? Did I hear like a kid, like a girl also? All I did was I looked down and I didn't say a thing. I just remained quiet. It was the best thing I could do. They took me back at the station. And once I was there, they put me on a lineup. And then they brought these two Caucasian girls, probably on their early 20s. They said, is this the guy who tried to steal your money? But they kept pointing at me. There was more people in the lineup. And then she said, I can't even recognize him. He's so bloody. So they cleaned my face with paper towels. And then I looked at her. And I don't know why I said this, but without even her saying, recognize me, I should have just kept quiet, I guess. But I was so filled of rage and anger. And I had a lot of emotions going. I looked at her and I said, did I do something to you? Did I? And she looked at me and she says, no, I don't even know this man. And then they separate me and they say, you cannot talk to her because you intimidated her. That's why she doesn't want to accuse you. So they brought me back out. I looked at her. She looked at me and she says, no, this man didn't try to rob from me. Apparently their MO was, or their motives were, that I was the one that tried to steal from her, and that's why the other three officers attacked me, and then that's why I beat them up on their mind. They were trying to frame me like that. After this girl, these two girls say that they didn't recognize me, then they brought me back right away to the judge. Then I explained my case, and I told him what happened because he saw me so beat up and everything. He didn't want to deal with any medical bills or anything. So what he did, he released me. He just said, okay, you're free to go. He says, but how can you prove that you just came from Mexico? I remember reaching into my pocket, and then I still had the ticket that they give you at the airport. Then I showed him that because they took my wallet. I had nothing. So they gave my wallet back. I checked to make sure everything was there. And then that's why I noticed. I said, where's my $100 bill? They went off and huddled between all of the officers. And then they said, And they talked for like 2 minutes, and then they came back and says, no, you had nothing. I asked them, I said, okay, at least can you guys give me a ride back? I asked them for a ride back to the border. They said, okay. So one of the guys says, here, I feel bad for you. So he reached in his pocket and he gave me a little bit of cash. He was like 200 pesos at the time, which is what, like 55 cents. One of the captains there, he says, I will take you back to the border. I give you a ride as community service, he says. We were going out the door. Remember I said that my mom gave me one of those chapsticks? As I was walking through the door, one of the police officers who arrested me, he was unwrapping it and using it. I looked at him and I said, you have my $100 bill. And he says, what are you talking about? I don't even know you. And I said, where did you get that chapstick? And I said, well, I bought it. And I said, let me see. He at the bottom, I put the word L-A. And I did that. I always do that. Even in my today, I still do that in my house. So nobody can use it but me. And then after they said they searched him and everything and they couldn't find anything. But this guy, out of his kindness of his heart, he says, I didn't steal from you. But you know what? I'm a victim here. But you know what? Here's 500 pesos. Okay? Leave me alone. When he dropped me off almost on the same area where they picked me up. So I started walking on the canals. I started really, really started hitting me. Really, really hit me. I've never been so alone in my life. I've never been so lonely. If I ever knew brokenness at that moment, I was aware of my brokenness. If I ever knew shame at that moment, I was full of shame. I was in a country that it was my country, but it was like if I wasn't. I was hungry. I was in a lot of pain. I was very cold. I was very hungry. And I was very, very scared. I didn't know anybody there. I was lost. So what I did, remember the gap I mentioned earlier where I hid? I was looking for one of those gaps because I didn't want anybody to see me crying. I found one of those big, but this one was bigger. I found one of those gaps and then I went in there. It's like I went in there and I just sit there and I cry and I cried. And I remember hearing and feeling rats, you know, walking by my feet. I didn't care. I felt like I touched bottom. And at that moment, I was actually questioning. I knew about God. I heard about God. I didn't have a relationship with Him. I knew God as a father, that it was far, far away from me. So I started crying out to Him, and I started questioning, and I started saying, look. I mean, all my whole life, it's nothing but a struggle. What is this? Why me? I said, there's so many people. I started questioning myself because there was a lot of bad people on earth. And why not them? Why me? So I started crying and crying. I mean, I cried, I don't know, maybe for half an hour. All of a sudden, I start feeling this, like hearing this rumble. It was like this rumble, like something and like shaking. And in my mind, I didn't know what was going on. All I remember was try to look up. And then as I look up, there was like an explosion really quick, like split second. I was in like water, in a lot of water. And that just, waist deep water. No. I was swimming in water, and I didn't know what happened. So I'm fighting, trying to get up to the top and get some air. I don't know what's going on. I'm on a lot of pain, really cold. So my instinct is to swim towards the sides, not to go fight the current or go with the current. When I got to the other side, I figured out what happened. what happened was that the gap where I was standing on, it wasn't a gap. It was a relief valve where they released water from the sewers. They just opened up and that thing flew me off with such force that it just shoot me off and flew me off. And then I learned that they do that at night to prevent people getting hit during the day, because at night there's less people. It was sewage water, yes. In Mexico, there's an old saying that says, solamente falta que un perro venga y me mire los pies. The only thing left is for a dog to come and pee on my feet. That's the only thing left. That's how low you come. I started crying and I went on my knees. I saw this group of people, and this group of people, they were homeless and junky, and they were sitting around this can. Like it was like a 200 gallon drum cut in half, made out of metal, and they made it like a fire pit. So I got close to them, and when I got close to them, I was obviously very cold. So I got close to them, and I said, "Would you guys allow me to?" Because the circle was so tight. There was a lot of people there. I said, "Would you guys please allow me to get close to the fire so I can warm up myself?" As I get closer, they started kicking me. They started calling me stinky. Can you imagine? You know, homeless. They were telling me that, you know, I was too bad. They were too good for me. That's how low I got. Now, I wasn't mad at them. I was so full of shame that I felt like I have no right to even get mad. What I did, I asked them and I said, "If I could get my own wood, and can you give me some of your fire so I can start my own bonfire here?" They said, yeah. Just pick up your own sticks, whatever, and come back when you need fire. Okay. So I start picking up papers. I start picking up sticks, everything I could, you know, dead grass, whatever. When I was ready, I went back to them and I asked them for some fire. They, I lit up a piece of paper, and then I remember trying to run back to my little pit. And when I started the fire, I put sticks on it and I started throwing papers on it so I can keep the fire alive. I had this piece of paper that, I was going to throw in there. And my hands were still like soggy or wet, and it got stuck on my hand. I remember that. Then I shook my hand and it fell down and on the floor. And then I picked it up again and I threw it, not just put it there. I threw it so it wouldn't get stuck on my hand, and it didn't land on the fire, landed on the side. When I picked it up, I noticed that it was folded. When I unfolded, I start seeing these letters in there, and it was written like with a Sharpie. It was in Spanish. It's just letters in there. It didn't have no numbers or anything. And as I start reading it, it said this: "Thus said the Lord, the one that formed you, Israel, and the one that created you, Jacob. I call you by your name. You are mine. When you walk through the waters, you will not run. And when you walk through the fire, you will not burn. And the fire will not burn you. Because I love you and you're honored." I mean, when I heard those words, my entire world shaked. I mean, anything I knew on this earth, nothing mattered. I look up to heaven and I said, "You do exist." You see me and you hear me. When I was there, you were not silent. You were paying attention to me. I matter. You know, there's billions of people on this earth, but you see me. You're a God. You're a God that see me as one. You don't see me as part of the masses. I said, thank you. I love you. I love you, Father. For the first time, I called someone Father. I call that honey-like thick love, that it sticks to you and it's there and you can't even imagine it. After that, I started crying and screaming, and you could hear the people on the other side, the homeless, screaming, the stinky has gone mad, the stinky has gone mad, he's crazy. And somebody walking by, I remember that at that moment, I was raising my hands to heaven and with the paper in my hand and screaming out loud how much he said, I love you too. I love you, Father. I was calling him Father. He didn't tell me he was my father. I knew he was my father. Nobody had to tell me he was. I knew he was. Then this guy walks by, pulls a gun, and demanded money. That moment, I still have the paper on my right hand. I remember opening my arms and say, look at me. What can you take from me? In fact, you can't kill me. I got close to him. You know what the Bible says, that the peace of God that surpasses all understanding? At that moment, I was so cold, but the peace of God surpassed it. I was in so much pain, but yet it was secondary. Like, it didn't even matter. I was so cold, so hungry, so thirsty, but none of that mattered. The only thing I didn't have anymore, it was fear. It was peace and love combined. Explain it with words, I cannot. And at this moment, when I talk about this, when I tell this story, it's a well that God opened, and I still drink from it as of today. So, because I feel the same thing, I feel His love, I feel it. So when this after I said that to this guy, tried to rob me, he shook his head. He looked at the other guys he says, "Yeah, you guys are right. This guy is crazy." He left. I continued to read the note over and over and over. And I continued to cry and cry and cry. I don't know what time it was by then. All of a sudden, I heard this voice, the same voice that told me stop when the police officers were chasing me. That same voice, this time he called me. And see, he said, come to me. But he called me from beyond the fence.
Believe it or not, this story gets even wilder from there. In the next episode, however, we'll take a step back to understand why a 21-year-old would be alone on the border, risking his life in the hope of freedom. And to understand that, we've got to go back to Lewis's childhood and why he so desperately wanted to return to the United States. Next time on My Friend Lewis.
I used to stand by the road watching for these so-called motorhomes to come. I heard that they can take children to adopt them. So in my mind, I was just standing by the side of the road, waiting for these so-called Americans, I'd never seen one, to drive by so I can just flag them down somehow so they can pick me up and take me with them. I was like, that's my chance. That's my way out.
My Friend Lewis is a production of Blue Sheep Media in association with Lifestream.org. Copyright 2021 by Wayne Jacobson. All rights reserved. Produced by Ken Joy for Ken Joy Media.
Well, there it is. Episode 1, My friend Lewis, I know we left you on a cliffhanger there, and actually that cliffhanger is not going to pay off till episode 7. But don't be discouraged, because I'm telling you what, you're going to want to get there through all the other twists and turns of this story. As exciting as episode 1 is, it gets better from here, deeper from here, more alive through here. And this, yes, there's a lot that will challenge you, a lot that will enthrall you, and just a fun story that you can share with your friends and relatives and hopefully your social media feeds. I hope you find it that kind of a story worth sharing around, and you do it kind of freely and openly. So I hope you find your way over to myfriendlewis.com. That's L-U-I-S. This is the only podcast we're going to run here on the God Journey. The rest of it will be there. So go on over there, find a way to subscribe to it through your favorite podcast provider. You can also see the upcoming episodes, when they'll release and what they're about. They're all listed there as well.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.